Welcome to the Solution for Success show, brought to you by Nashville Success Summit. I'm your host, Joanne Ekden, and today's guest is Clayton Wraith. Clayton is an attorney here in Nashville that specializes in entertainment and small business law, and he's going to share with us some information that we need to hear about intellectual property. Have you ever wondered just how much trouble you could get into if you copied a picture on the internet and posted it on your blog or reposted it on social media? Well, Clayton's going to walk us through what the actual law is and what we need to do to protect ourselves.
Let's talk then, Clayton, about what it is you do. I know that you are a lawyer, that you've been in here in Nashville for just a couple of years, right? I think since 2010, is that correct?
Yeah, that's when I passed the bar. So I'm fairly young as an attorney, as attorneys go. They usually would call me like a baby lawyer. I don't know if I consider myself a baby lawyer, but that's the expression that's often used for attorneys with under 5 years of experience or so.
I will say, knowing from your background that you're a rugby player and the fact that I've seen you physically, I would never call you a baby.
Well, I've been called worse and I've been called better. So either way, it's all right with me. And it's nothing that I take offense by. It just means that there's a lot of things that you have to work harder to get done because you haven't done them yet, or you need to learn exactly the procedures that are involved. But I stay humble about it, and I keep an open mind, and I'm never afraid to ask my peers. And because of that, I think I've been able to grow fairly rapidly as far as my experience and my skill set. So it's one of those things where, you know, if the name fits, you wear it, but hopefully you grow out of it before you know it.
Exactly. So tell me, what are your areas of specialty? I mean, so, you know, you say lawyer. Lawyer's a big spectrum, right? So what areas do you specialize in?
Sure. Well, that's absolutely right. People practice in all types of fields as an attorney. When I became an attorney, I wanted to be able to help people. That was one of my driving goals. And I found that one of the biggest things that I can do to help people is to help my clients navigate the law in their particular fields. I grew up in a small business family, so I felt that probably one of the most important aspects of today's economy and society are small businesses and individuals who are trying to navigate different, I guess, avenues of commerce. Coming to Nashville, I had a particular interest in working with entertainers. I have a strong belief that we're in a very important part of our history here as a society, and that we're dealing with a lot of political and social and historical events that are shaping what our country and our civilization is going to be for the next generation, and communication is a critical component of that. So the idea, not to be long-winded, is that if you can help people to communicate through music, through business, through your own interactions on a day-to-day basis, you can create an atmosphere and an opportunity to progress in a democratic and appropriate manner. I don't really care what side of the aisle you're on, just as long as you have the conversations that are important in making good policy and making good business.
Give me an example of what you mean when we start talking about communications and why would I, if I'm a small business owner, why would I need you?
Sure, yeah. To be more specific, generally my practice is based on helping small businesses and musicians navigate regulatory systems, contracts, intellectual properties, including copyright and trademark, and formation to corporate structures, in order to help maximize the potential in today's markets. So being that we're dealing with an interconnected business space and globalism on a level that requires you to have certain formalities in place in order to avoid negative consequences and undue risk, I try to help people assess where they're vulnerable and what they can do to ensure that they're competing and producing at a maximum level.
Okay, so what would prompt someone to come and seek you? Because, you know, lawyers, you know, earned or not, they have a bad name of, you know, we hire a lawyer when we have a problem, right, when we have to get bailed out of some legal issue. So what would make a musician or a small business owner seek you out? What are the things that they're hoping to accomplish?
Well, that's what we're trying to do, is avoid those problems. And it's very good that you point that out, because in general, people always think about what happened after it's too late. If you go to an attorney, generally speaking, and I always recommend that people do, if you find a good one, they're willing to not only deal with what already happened, but anticipate problems that could potentially happen. That's one of the main things that you're trying to do, is prevent people from suffering the consequences of being ill-prepared, or by not following some formality or taking into consideration a circumstance that ends up being pretty detrimental. If you can stop these problems before they start, not only do you save yourself a lot of heartache, you can save yourself a lot of money. You know, I'm also a Rule 31 listed mediator, so I believe that there's better ways to get things done than litigation. Now, that's blasphemy from a lot of attorneys, because, you know, you want to rack up litigation bills. That's fine. I understand that school of thought, but my idea and my belief system revolves more around conflict resolution and trying to figure out problems so that people can move on with their lives. I know that a lot of times when people come to attorneys, they're in a state of confusion, they're in a state of panic, and I hope to be able to prevent that from even happening so you can avoid that. Now, I can certainly help out if it's already in that situation. You know, if we're in damage control and we're back trying to take care of some problems that have already arisen, then I believe that, you know, we can always come up with some workable solution to minimize the damage. However, if you can prevent that initially, I think you're better off.
Let's talk about some of the things that are happening now with everything being online. And so we've got people who are posting all kinds of content and materials online, and I think that that's an area that's really churning when it comes to, you know, intellectual property, copyright, trademark laws. Can you give us some advice about how to keep ourselves out of trouble when we're posting information out on the Internet?
Before I answer it, I just want to clarify that anything that I give today is going to be legal information. I'm not authorized, based upon the rules of professional responsibility, to give legal advice to people that aren't my client. You understand, it's basically to protect people from going around giving people information and having them depend upon it without knowing the full circumstances or the context of the questions they're asking. So just to get it out of the way, anything that I give on the podcast today is legal information and doesn't constitute legal advice.
I think that's fine. I think everyone expects that, but thank you for clarifying.
Sure. I think a lot of it has to do with content control, being able to understand that whatever you're putting online is going to leave like a cyber footprint, so to speak, or a fingerprint. So they're always going to be able to track it back. And generally speaking, if it's something for a business, like a smaller business that has employees, you really need to get social media policy in place. When I talk to small businesses that have, you know, more than 5 to 10 employees, and they always ask, well, you know, what are we going to do in regards to our clients online? We don't want anything controversial. We don't want them tweeting any potentially secret material. You know, you don't want your secret formulas or some of your business strategies being broadcasted to an audience that you can't control. So it's important initially to have a set guideline that you're going to establish and implement within your business. Now, as far as protecting your intellectual property, the tools that are used are normally, as you mentioned, copyright, trademark, or patent protections, all under the larger umbrella of intellectual property. Now, that being said, these are more shields than they are swords. So, really, being able to keep control of your content is essential. You can copyright whatever you're going to put online. However, if you want to really make the most out of your own creative thoughts and your original ideas, it's important to have a business strategy that takes advantage of it initially so you can really establish yourself in the market. Because generally speaking, the strength of the protection offered by the copyright or offered by the trademark is directly related to the strength in your own brand and the product that you're putting out there, particularly with trademarks. If your trademark is used in commerce and yet hasn't been established as a strong brand or well-known, then the notoriety and the protections offered by trademark laws, while there and an important tool, aren't necessarily going to prevent somebody from taking advantage of your goodwill, which is what you're doing when you're creating a trademark, basically trying to encapsulate and protect the goodwill that's associated with your business.
So what recourse do you have, though, if you've gone through and done, what you just described? So let's say we come up with a phrase that we trademark, and we say this is the brand we're going to use, and we go through and do the trademark with the, government office, right, get it all in place, and then we find someone who's starting to talk about us or pretend to be us using that brand name. What recourse would we have at that point?
Well, if someone's violating your intellectual property, you can always file and get a cease and desist order from the courts. And then afterwards, you can go ahead and bring an action or cause of action for the damages that are related to it. Now, proving damages is oftentimes the process of establishing what type of business or what opportunities were lost because someone else took advantage of your intellectual property. Again, what we're trying to do here is protect somebody from abusing your own intellectual property. Intellectual property is important enough to be in the Constitution, so it definitely deserves protection. There's a lot of debate about to what extent these protections prevent creativity or prevent people from expressing their own ideas. People try to limit markets by saying that, well, this was my idea to begin with, or this is just my idea revisited. And that can end up being a litigation fight that no one wants to have because there's a lot of attorney's fees involved and a long time that in drawn-out court process that takes away from time you could be using to build your business. So, again, it kind of goes back to, by establishing your brand, if someone's talking about you and they're not talking about you negatively or they're not comparing you to another product, which they can do, you're really just getting free press. You know, if you have a strong enough brand and someone's talking about you, then potentially it could be good. So it's always something that you have to balance. Is this something that is worth fighting for? Now, to that point that I mentioned, if someone uses your trademark in a comparison to their own product, that's legal. That's fine. But they can't do it if they're trying to spread some type of misinformation or they're quoting you out of context. All that stuff is definitely something that's worthy of taking action against because you don't want your business to suffer because someone else is using your intellectual property.
And we're talking about trademarks here in this particular example, but you're really talking about any work that's been protected, right?
We are talking about the larger umbrella of intellectual properties as they relate to small business matters or medium to large business matters. Really, it comes down to these are tools that have been put into place, laws that have been passed, to try to allow individuals to take advantage and to make the most out of the creative business that they've had the divine foresight to come up with. You really want people to be able to profit and prosper from their hard work and their ingenuity and their creativity. So generally speaking, that's the goal.
You basically said in your example that if they're not talking negatively about you, but what if they are? What if there's someone who's maybe a disgruntled customer or a competitor or whoever it might be out there talking about you in a negative fashion? Is there anything you can do to stop that or to somehow refute that to get both sides of the story out in the public eye?
It's an interesting topic because it brings up different constitutional rights. Are we talking about the rights to protect ourselves and our business and our intellectual property? Are we talking about freedom of expression and our right to, critique or criticize? Now, if it comes to negative feedback on, say, a website, then there's potentially an opportunity to contact the web provider and ask for those comments to be taken down or to contact the customers directly. A lot of businesses will take a proactive approach. If someone leaves a negative remark, they'll counter. They'll put their own narrative right below it. It helps the people to understand that although this person feels this way, generally speaking, most of our customers are satisfied, and then invites them to go and take a look at the other comments that are more positive. Whenever you're dealing with internet traffic and what people sometimes call cyber bullies, where they just go and they want to talk a lot of trash and just really make negative comments for the sake of negative comments, some of the best ways to fight that is with positivity, in my opinion. Now, there are torts out there that can be used if it's a lie or if they're slandering you or if it falls under unfair business practices, then there's definitely some recourse that could be taken as far as litigation goes. But sometimes that process can be slow. So an immediate impact in a very fast-paced cyber world it can be better to take a proactive approach in basically combating the negative press with the facts. I mean, if your company is really sustaining a level of achievement that you're proud of, put it out there. Let them know.
Yeah, I think the best advice I've gotten in this scenario was essentially to take the conversation offline with the individual and do what you need to do to make that right. But then, like you say, to start blanketing the positive information about what else is happening with your company or what are the products and services you're offering, and basically not to engage online because then it just becomes ugly, right? So.
Sure, and generally speaking, just to comment on that, and I don't want to let people think that there's nothing that you can do, the mm-hmm. torts, personal injury torts, are constructed of three legs. There's a cause of action, there's a duty, and there's damages. So the cause of action is based upon your duty to act as a reasonable person. And so if someone's spreading lies about you or there's a personal tort that basically has created an opportunity for there to be damages, for instance, now your business or your name has suffered irreparable harm in your community based on some slander, then there's certainly recourse there that can be an important litigation tool. So not to say that there's not other options, I'm just looking at it from a more practical perspective in that, you know, a lot of times all that will do is cause even a fiercer backlash. But once you start suing your own customers, you're alienating them and creating potentially a bad reputation for yourself or your company.
So let me ask you, maybe change gears just a little bit. We've been hearing a lot in the news about, especially with online images, where people are using images without having permission and getting into trouble. And you know, let's face it, we all do that. We'll go out there and do searches and start looking at really cool pictures and want to use them, whether it's on a blog post or on our website or maybe even just in, you know, some sort of post on social media. And it's harmless for the most part. But where does the line get drawn where it's no longer harmless and where you're actually doing something in violation of the law?
It's an interesting conversation that's being had, generally speaking, and that's one of the reasons that I ended up pursuing a law degree was so that I could be a part of these conversations. I think that, you know, again, like I was talking about earlier, as a society, we're having to debate whether or not we think these how the law should function amidst a changing and a dynamic background. Now, what you're talking about specifically is copyright infringement and fair use. And fair use has specific factors. It's a test that has been laid out and created in common law that basically examines certain factors in order to understand if this copyright infringement is potentially fair use.
You've mentioned that a couple of times now. What exactly is fair use?
So when we're talking about copyright law and whether or not you can use an image or a small clip on a blog or some type of creative work that you're doing yourself, there are a lot of opportunities to defend yourself using fair use. Fair use factors is a doctrine that limits the exclusive rights of a copyright holder by permitting others to make limited use of portions of the copyrighted work for free. But this is admitting to copyright infringement, so it's important to understand that this isn't a fail-safe or a cure-all for infringement. But for the listeners' information, the four fair use factors, that's a bit of a tongue twister, are the purpose and character of the use, which means is it transformative, as in did you just take the picture and use it to do the same thing that the person originally intended, or did you take the picture and make it part of a collage or put it into a different context or maybe change all the colors and alter how it was presented to make it something else, something unique. You added a creative element. Second, the nature of the copyrighted work. Third, the amount of the substantial part of the used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole, which means basically are you using just a quote, a couple lines, or are you using like the whole book? And second, the effect of the use on the potential market for the value of the copyrighted work. And that just means, well, are you using this, and is that preventing somebody else from making money that they would normally be able to earn based upon their creative work within the copyright? And okay. All these factors are weighed by a judge. So generally speaking, it's a combination. None of them are going to be the main reason that you win or lose. It's going to be a balancing between all of them. And again, there's case law and a lot of details that go with each one. So it's important to talk to somebody, an attorney who's familiar with the material, before really trying to base your defense on fair use factors.
That really is only comes into play if you haven't already gotten permission to use the work from the owner, right? So if you haven't gotten permission, then you have to really seek some advice to go through these factors to make sure that you're operating on the right side of the law.
Yeah, exactly. That's well put. If you do have a licensing agreement or you get some type of permissive use from the copyright holder, that's not a problem. This is to say, if you receive a lawsuit at your door basically claiming that you've been infringing upon their copyright, you really are going to need to talk to somebody and start mounting a defense. And it could be that you didn't actually infringe in the first place, but if you do realize that you did make the mistake of infringing, then these factors can sometimes be used to kind of get you off the hook based upon the idea that what you did wasn't that bad.
Okay, well, and it all goes back to what you were saying earlier, right, is the law is there to protect you.
Now, generally speaking, any time that you use an image that does not belong to you without permission from the person who owns the copyright to it, you're infringing, and there's not only potential civil repercussions, but also criminal repercussions if it's to a certain extent.
But folks are out on the internet, maybe you're writing a blog post and you want to put a picture to it just to capture the eye, or you see somebody post an image out on Facebook and you repost it, not knowing the source or where it came from or whether or not there's even a copyright on the image, right? So at what point, you know, is all of that putting us in danger of copyright infringement, or is there some sort of rule of thumb we can follow to keep ourselves out of trouble?
So technically, yes. To answer your question, whenever you put an image that you don't own the copyright to on your own website or repost something, you're potentially causing and creating infringement. Now, enforcement of that infringement is going to be on the person who actually owns the copyright. And a lot of times, they're not necessarily doing their diligence as far as searching the internet and trying to find images that belong to them. If you do receive a notice and takedown procedure, which is the initial step normally taken in order to have someone stop using the image that's copyrighted. Now, as a rule of thumb, there are places where you can go get images that are in the public domain or that have free licensing agreements that are open and anybody can use. That's always the best bet. And you're also going to, any of the pictures that you take yourself or that you would go out and use, that's obviously your own intellectual property and something that you can use as well. So you have to be careful. Now, that being said, if you're using them and you're not, and there are certain exceptions, for instance, schools are allowed to use them for educational purposes, or if it's part of a larger work and the license agreement states that people can use them publicly, then you would be able to use those pictures as well. So I would never recommend reposting pictures that you didn't have some clear licensing agreement with, but I understand that in the general day-to-day, people don't necessarily have the opportunity or the wherewithal to find out who owns that licensing agreement. So if you were to come into a court situation and someone was to say that you violated their copyright protections, you would be faced with an opportunity to defend yourself, and you would likely fall back on the fair use factors that we were discussing.
Okay, got it. For me, I know I'm asking you some questions here just about things online, but the area that you operate in is much broader than some of the questions I'm asking. So if you would, what would you say would be common areas where a musician or small business owner would need to put some time and focus to keep themselves out of trouble? What would be like the things we should look at and add to our list of things we need to put in place?
Well, everybody's already got a really large list of things they need to do. So I hate to stack on and add a bunch of stuff, but there are some basic things that you can look into. For starters, I think it's really important for everybody to take a look at their corporate structure. It's not the most difficult aspect of your business, but it could be the most important. Limiting your liability is the basis for preventing big-time problems down the line. And creating a corporate structure has become easier than ever. When you talk about the differences between forming a corporation or an LLC, a limited liability corporation, you're giving yourself a lot of benefits, and the price of doing it wouldn't necessarily be cost prohibitive. Also, okay. It's important for you to take a look at where you're trying to accomplish online. And that goes back to something we mentioned earlier as far as establishing certain protocols that you're going to be following if you are going to have a website that could potentially have people posting stuff on it. That's where you could come into a lot of issues. We mentioned earlier if you have a blog and you were going to have somebody else post pictures on it or you were going to post pictures on it yourself, the DMCA, which is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, requires that individual businesses or individuals with websites that are going to be conducting for-profit business have a notice and takedown procedure in place. A notice and takedown procedure is an opportunity for someone, a copyright owner, to be able to contact your company and allow them to take down whatever infringing content might have been put up. Now, this notice and takedown procedure can take into consideration the likelihood that that actually belongs to the person and isn't just, you know, someone saying, hey, you need to take this down because it's going to be bad for my business. But those specific instances need to be articulated, and you need to have some type of procedure in place. And then more generally, I think that everybody needs to take a look at their contracts. A lot of times when businesses are getting started, they just kind of go online and they get some boilerplate contracts that they feel will cover it, and they'll say, oh, well, we'll just deal with that later, or these contracts seem fine enough. Generally speaking, when you go to court over a legal issue, the contract is going to be an essential element as evidence of the agreement between the two parties. That being the case, it's essential that you know and the person that you're doing business with knows what exactly they're getting themselves into.
And there you're talking about any kind of arrangement, business arrangement, where maybe I'm hiring somebody or I'm pulling in a vendor or I'm providing service to someone. You're basically talking about that when you're talking about those kinds of contracts.
Well, it really depends on the business that you're running. But you're right in saying that there's a lot of opportunities for contracts to come up. And a lot of times a handshake is what people will go on, and that's good enough until something goes wrong. Now, again, always anticipating the worst, unfortunately, that's kind of the lawyer's gig. You got to understand that when you put different clauses into the contract, you're essentially agreeing to do business a certain way. And there are a lot of standard stuff that goes into contracts, and that's there for a reason. Now, for you to understand those reasons, I believe, is important because it gives you a better opportunity to decide what you're going to do when these certain situations arise. If this happens, what happens? If this happens, what happens? That way, you're not asking those questions down the line when you're paying lawyers to fight it out in court, or you've missed an order because there was some misinformation or misunderstanding about who was going to be responsible for what in the circumstances of this type of breach. Breach just being someone not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
It makes perfect sense. You know, like I said, a lot of times we think about putting these things in place after a problem has come up. So to have this conversation now and to share this with our listeners so that start thinking about it ahead of time and put it in place so that we don't have so many problems, right, like you said earlier. So to that end, let me ask you, who are the customers that you work with the most?
Sure. So I've really taken an maybe unconventional approach to how I've been running my practice. I'm really hoping to work with people that have a lot of vision and are trying to accomplish something that hasn't been done before. Now, in the music industry, that means having something to say and having the talent to say it in a way that people will listen to. I believe that we're in a market where the best music isn't necessarily the music that gets played on the radio or even the most exposure. And so that being the case, I think it's more important than ever for individual artists to be able to create revenue streams and find avenues to have their views heard. And if it's worth hearing, I believe that people will hear it. Essentially, the Internet has provided us with a lot of noise, but also a lot of opportunities. So that being the case, the good and the cream, so to speak, needs to rise to the top. And that can be difficult, particularly when you're focused on doing the creative aspects without necessarily taking into consideration a lot of the business side of things. Now, that goes along the lines of small businesses as well. For instance, one of the companies that I'm associated with is called Candle Ray, and they're a new LED green company that's coming into Nashville. I got involved with them because I believe that it's a great opportunity. They're doing something really positive for the environment. They have a good business model, and they're going to be on the cutting edge of a new market. So something along those lines brings in a lot of different problems, potentially, with the law. There's a lot of regulatory stuff that people need to deal with. There's a lot of governmental checks and forms that are somewhat complicated and will need to be filled out. And there's also a lot of potential issues as far as contractors and the ability for a light company to guarantee that whatever they're going to do isn't going to put the potential customer at risk for regulatory penalties. I'm always willing to sit down and discuss potential representation with clients face-to-face. I pride myself on being accessible to my clients consistently and forming a real genuine relationship. I know that a lot of times people don't necessarily have the highest opinion of attorneys. I know that my mom was scared to death of them, and that's one of the reasons I became one, because I was like, I don't know
you
why she's so nervous
your mom?
About it. Well, just the fact that people were always worried and they didn't know that the law is actually a tool. And I firmly believe that. That's one of my basic philosophies is that, look, the laws are tools that have been established by our society to help people, generally speaking. They prevent harm and they give people an opportunity to address a wrong that's been done to them.
Clayton, we've talked a lot about all the Internet and intellectual property. Let's talk about musicians just for a minute. And what is it that you can do for an individual musician or a performing artist?
Well, it's an interesting time, and we've seen that the model in the music industry has been shaken up a bit, and generally that's provided a lot of opportunities. Now, in the old school, there was an attorney for the label, and the label would basically take care of everything that you needed to do. They'd do your licensing, they'd worry about all your contracts, they'd give you your tour support, they'd put out your records, and then they'd all take it back after you've already got your advances. Now, we're in a situation where each individual musician is their own business, and they need to start taking that into consideration when they're doing business. That is to say, they should have their own formation of a corporate entity, they need to be mindful of licensing and publishing, and they need to make sure that they're taking advantage of all the revenue streams that are available to them. That includes a lot of internet marketing, the opportunity to do some licensing agreements with potential commercials or corporate entities, and remembering who they are as an artist and what they want to achieve. A lot of people have different dreams at this point. You know, some people just want to play their songs and make enough money songwriting so that they don't have to work a day job and they can just keep doing what they love, and that's playing music. Others want to be global superstars. Now, depending on that spectrum, there's a lot of different things that need to be taken into consideration. And I like to be able to help people understand what some of those steps are and what some of the things they can do to really promote and progress down their own life dream.
Great advice, and I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right, the music industry's changed so much that now they're no longer just musicians, they're businessmen as well, men and women. All right, so Clayton, you told us earlier that you got into law because your mom was a little bit afraid of it, but you came from a small business family. So to expand on that some more and tell us why you got into law and why you're focusing on small business.
Sure. I'm from the West Coast, and my father's a commercial fisherman, so there was obviously a lot of liability associated with the work that we were doing. Anytime that you go out and you're on the ocean, life and death is an issue, and therefore you have liability insurance. My mom was always one of those people that needed insurance on everything. Generally speaking, I found that being an independent contractor or owning your own corporation came with a lot of pitfalls and a lot of potential successes and a lot of rewards. So generally, I think that it's a great way to make a living and support your family. And I like to help people that don't necessarily have the resources or the infrastructure that, you know, a Fortune 500 company can or does mm-hmm. normally have. So I think that you can get a lot of the same benefits for a lot less money if you find the right person to work with. And that's what I try to do when I help people individually, is really address their needs and try to help them to achieve a success that can not only support their family, but help them live a very comfortable life.
All right, and I can certainly attest to it, having met you now on several occasions. You're an approachable guy, you know your stuff, and you generally come across as someone who wants to help, and so I can definitely attest to that.
Okay, Clayton, this has been a great conversation. Now, for anyone who wants to get in touch with you and learn some more, how can they do that?
My name is Clayton Thomas Wraith, and I could be contacted at 615-852-6841, or via my email address at claytonwraith@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you, Clayton.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a wonderful time speaking with you, and I'm always available to do it again.
All right. Thanks a million, Clayton, and you take care.
So thank you for listening to this episode of Solution for Success by Nashville Success Summit. Again, I'm your host, Joanne Hickton. And as always, to get a copy of this recording along with the transcript, you can go to our website, nashvillesuccesssummit.com. Thank you and have a great week.